We're exploring a volume of 26 essays that bring the experiences of transgender military personnel to light through the decades, and in the process, give voice to transgender troops. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's first recall the moment in June 2016 when then Defense Secretary Ash Carter announced the lifting of the transgender ban in the military.
Effective immediately, transgender Americans may serve openly, and they can no longer be discharged or otherwise separated from the military just for being transgender.
13 months later, President Trump abruptly announced a ban on transgender people serving in the military. As one essay writer put it, we dropped our walls, and a short time later, they dropped the bombs. Are you a transgender military member or a veteran? What has your experience been like serving your country? 800-642-1234. Bree Fram is a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Space Force, president of a transgender military advocacy organization called Sparta, and co-editor of the new book. It's called With Honor and Integrity, Transgender Troops in Their Own Words. Bree, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we also have Mel Emser-Herbert, who is a professor of sociology at Hamline University, also co-editor of the essay collection. Mel, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much.
Well, Mel, let's start with you, giving us some context as to where we are today, because we just heard the words there of Ash Carter, which were so pivotal in this essay collection, so many people writing about this moment. What are the circumstances today for transgender troops? What do they face?
Well, as of January, we have open service. So people who are trans can serve in the military, transition, join the military. The big issue is that the current state of affairs is only the action of the executive branch. This is not codified in law. So the big concern is that while we do have open service now, that could change in the future.
That could change in the future. And Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram, how is it for you? What do you see and hear, especially as you're in the Pentagon, paying very close attention to how the transgender community is treated in the military?
Well, I think what we see right now is with people being able to serve openly, honorably, authentically, we're changing opinions about transgender service. And as we look back to the history that you mentioned, opinion regarding how trans people can serve and if they should serve has changed dramatically since 2016. When we opened up transgender service, and then even when President Trump tweeted that we were a burden on the military, right about that time, only 50% of the American public and military members thought that open transgender service was a good idea. But after President Trump, in an ironic way, shone a spotlight on our service, within 6 weeks of his tweets, we were up to 70% approval in both the military and the American public, because our stories started getting out there of all the amazing things transgender troops were doing at home and deployed all around the world. 2 years later, by 2019, that was up in the high 80% range. And that's what we're seeing today, where the military understands the value that transgender service members bring to the mission, that we're here doing it. And with a few more years, we certainly hope that not having transgender people in the military would be just as unconscionable as not having African Americans or women or lesbians, gays, and bisexuals.
About civil rights here, and really a sea change, you're saying, in public perception of this. And Mel, you know, as you talk about stories here and hearing the stories, hearing authentic stories and getting the stories out there so that people can more truly understand, as you gathered these essays, some of these essay writers are currently in service. Others were in service decades ago. Some weren't comfortable using their real names. What can you say about how you gathered these essays?
Well, we put out a call through Sparta and through other avenues asking for people who were willing to share their stories in writing. And I'm just thrilled that we ended up with such a broad collection across branch, across rank, across time, because what we didn't do is selectively choose who would or would not be included. Everyone who was willing to do so was included. The one thing I would note is that only one person opted to not use their true name. So that's just one of the 26.
One of the 26. Brief Ram, what did you see as these essays kept coming in and as you read through these very personal accounts, what was going through your mind?
One of the things that I really think these 26 essays collectively highlight is not only is there no one way to be transgender, there's no one way to be transgender in the military. And the stories really show the humanity of these individuals and give you that sense that, hey, these might be people that I'd like to sit down and have a beer with or go to lunch and just understand a little bit more about this person as an individual. Because the stories, some are funny, some are poignant, some are sad, but all together, they're important in showing the breadth and depth of transgender service.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with the co-editors of a new book about transgender people who have served in the military. It's called With Honor and Integrity. We have Mel Emser Herbert, who's a sociology professor at Hamline University, Bree Fram, a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Space Force. You can join in with your story, 800-642-1234. I want to explore your essay, Bree Fram. You know, as you were sitting there on June 30th, 2016, you hear the words of Defense Secretary Ash Carter announcing transgender people can openly serve in the military. What happened to you that day? What was going through your mind?
Well, that was my day to come out. I had actually thought about sneaking into the room where the secretary was speaking and listening from the back, but I thought better of it, listened to him from my desk there in the Pentagon. And when he finished speaking, I had a note ready to go to my colleagues and a post out to Facebook to friends and family in the world coming out as transgender. But when he finished speaking, I still had some nerves and I hesitated before I hit send on my email and post to Facebook. And even then, after it was out, I ran away. I went down into the basement of the Pentagon, found the gym, and I like to say I went nowhere faster than ever before, burning out the motor on an elliptical machine with all the nervous energy I had, wondering, what's the reaction going to be? But when I came back to my desk, one by one, my colleagues walked over to me, shook my hand, and said, "It's an honor to serve with you." I was absolutely floored because the honor was all mine to serve with such amazing people. And on Facebook, nothing but love from so many people. It was incredible. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, were you surprised by that reaction? What were you expecting?
I was surprised that it was so overwhelmingly positive. I certainly expected some good reaction and some things that, you know, said, hey, it's going to be okay, but not the overwhelming level of positivity that I received. But it wasn't all great. My wife actually lost friends and family over it. Good friends that she still hasn't spoken with today because they simply couldn't accept or understand who she loved. There was some devastation along with that.
We're exploring an essay collection that gives voice to transgender military personnel and veterans. It's called With Honor and Integrity. We're hearing there from Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram, who is an astronautical engineer in the U.S. Space Force. Mel Emser Herbert is a sociologist at Hamline University. They're co-editors of this volume. What are your thoughts about transgender people serving in the military? What do you think the military or our country should do to help transgender people feel more welcome? How has diversity and inclusion evolved in your command? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're hearing the voices and lived experiences of transgender military personnel in America, past and present, on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The editors of a new essay collection point to 2014 data estimating that more than 15,000 transgender people serve in the military, and over 134,000 military veterans identify as transgender. Are you one? What has your experience been like? Are you an ally? What has your loved one encountered being transgender? Join in 800-642-1234. We have sociology professor Mel Emser Herbert and Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram, a rocket scientist, co-editors of the new book With Honor and Integrity, and they stay with us. Mel, I want to turn to you for a moment because there are so many poignant essays, but some words really stuck out to me. Jamie Hash, who said, "With every person I came to, I had to prepare myself to potentially lose that relationship forever. The process was mentally taxing, and coming out to my unit leadership was no different." What stuck out to you from some of these essays?
I keep saying, I'm always hesitant to point to one, to privilege one. I think I would echo what Bree said earlier, that the full scope of these essays shows how there isn't just one theme. There isn't just one way that people are trans or serve in the military. I think that one of the things that I really like to think about when I reflect on the essays is that there are degrees of humor sprinkled throughout. I think that for folks who may have very little to no exposure to this issue, there might be a sense that if they crack open the book, they're going to read about a lot of challenges, a lot of heartache. And while that's absolutely present, there's also so much humor and joy and to use the word that you heard earlier, positivity. I mean, I guess if I had to point to one thing, it would be the degree to which trans people were overwhelmingly welcomed and supported by their colleagues in military service, because I think that flies in the face of what a lot of people expect to be the case.
I picked up on that as well. In brief, Fram, I noticed from reading the essays is that how a commanding officer, how they treat that soldier is often more important than the official policy set by the commander-in-chief, the president. Can you talk about the relationships that transgender troops have with their commander, that immediate supervisor?
Yeah, your thought kind of points to a great headline the New York Times had out right before the Trump ban went into place in 2019, which said that transgender troops face hostile government, welcoming military. And that tends to be the case. But what you mentioned is that really important relationship between the service member and their immediate commander, because commanders in the military have the opportunity to really set the culture of their unit. And one of the things commanders really need to engage on is creating a culture that gets the most out of every member of their team. And if you have a commander who's supportive of diversity and inclusion and make sure that everyone is welcome for who they are, not only is that person going to be better, but the unit's going to be better, because what they're really doing there is unlocking potential. So if someone comes to a commander and says, "I'm trans," and that commander can treat it as an opportunity, similar to if their soldier or their airman came to them and said, "I want to take a class. I want to get a degree because it's going to make me better at my job and it's going to make me more valuable to the unit." And that's the greatest thing we can offer by letting people be themselves, is taking away that energy that they had to use up until that point to protect their identity. They can then dedicate that to the mission. And that's incredibly important to the military.
And so much energy devoted to when to transition, how it should happen, and the timing and timeline of everything, and what is in those papers on this person in the military. I'm wondering, you can also speak to, you had this great analogy about cholesterol, and I'm wondering if you could describe it to us.
Sure. Being trans for some people is something that is recognize, known, you know who you are even before you can speak. But in some cases, you know, it takes a little understanding of yourself, and it takes time to cast off the societal expectations that have been placed on you by friends, family, and society at large, all based on what a doctor said you were by looking at your anatomy when you were born. And so I liken it to the idea that being trans may be like having a high cholesterol condition, where for some people, you can live with it and it never gets to that place where, you know what, I have to treat this right now. But for many others, it gets to that point where your doctor is saying, and you're understanding that I need to treat this condition right now, or I may suffer in ways, or I may not be able to reach that full potential that we talked about. So when it becomes medically necessary that a person transition, and in the military, that's determined by your doctor, that's when that occurs, where someone is going to transition gender in the military.
And there's also your file and gender dysphoria, and if that is put in your file and when it's put, because that can really dictate where you go in your career. There is a lot riding on that.
There is, but gender dysphoria as a condition is something all trans people have to accept in the military, because it's kind of the gatekeeping function. Without that, there can't be billing for medical insurance purposes. Mm-hmm. But it's something for me, I always resisted, because a part of that diagnosis says that you must be experiencing clinically significant distress related to your gender. And to me, that never seemed like who I was. And the way I describe that is that trans people can be good at their jobs, they can be great at their jobs, but without that next step, they can't be their best at their jobs. So for me, it was that, all right, I have to bite the bullet, I have to accept this on my records in order to unlock my potential, to be a better commander myself at the time, and to move forward in the military serving to the best of my ability.
We're talking with Bree Fram, who is a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Space Force, and Mel Emser Herbert, who's a sociologist, professor of sociology at Hamline University, co-editors of With Honor and Integrity. You can join in the conversation about transgender troops in the military in your own words, your stories, 800-642-1234. Mel, as a sociologist and from that perspective, I found one thing. Someone, I think it was Evan, who said inheriting male privilege is a byproduct of transitioning from female to male. And I'm wondering, from a sociologist's perspective, what were some nuances that you found in these essays that, you know, is something that you study and that you really think about a lot?
Oh, wow. I think that the thing that stands out is, was really captured by Evan, is the awareness that people have. And I do have to say, I don't think it happens just in a flash. You know, the process of someone realizing that they're trans, often going through years, if not decades, of keeping it to themselves, thinking it through, being very much aware of how in the gender binary, the quote, other people perform gender and such. I think that there are some things that come through, it's not the focus, but that come through in the essays that allow us to see the social construction of gender. Hmm. And that's what I would identify as the heart of this, that I was actually thinking just this morning, totally unrelated to this conversation, about the degree to which, even as someone's voice might change, there are things that we learn in how to speak that are very gendered, and mm-hmm. we learn it. It's not about our vocal cords or anything like that, but modulation and such. So I think that some of that comes through as people write about the process that they were engaged in with, you know, figuring out how to present themselves.
I'm sure you think about this too, Bree Fram, as in the engineering world, so dominated by men. What are your takeaways here?
Mel touched on a lot of the good ones of the introspection that is often a part of the trans experience. And to me, that gets back again to our conversation about unlocking potential, because so many trans people have to really understand and develop the self-confidence to say, this is who I am, no matter what I've been told by the external world up to this point. I'm going to be me. And to have that level of confidence and that knowledge of self really serves our transgender service members well as they go forward. The one other bit that amazes me always when I look at these stories is the resilience of transgender service members to have faced these external pressures, to have faced their commander in chief declaring them a burden on the service, yet to continue to serve and continue to strive to do their best to serve their country amazes me all the time.
That is Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram, who's going to hang on the line here. And I want to say thank you, Mel Emser Herbert. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Professor of Sociology at Hamline, co-editor of With Honor and Integrity, Transgender Troops in Their Own Words. After the news break, we'll pick up the conversation, hear from the highest ranking out transgender veteran in the country, who is a Wisconsin native. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. Transgender military service members tell their stories from the heart in a new essay collection called With Honor and Integrity. We're discussing takeaways from the essays here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. For decades, transgender people had been barred from serving openly, but the ACLU points to recent studies. About one-fifth of all transgender adults are veterans, making transgender people about twice as likely as others to serve in the military. Join in with your experience, 800-642-1234. We have Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram, co-editor of the book, stays with us. And now let's bring in Colonel Sherry Swokowski, an Army veteran who served 35 years, including 20 years of active service with the Wisconsin National Guard. She is the highest ranking out transgender veteran in our nation. Colonel Swokowski, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me. It's good to be back.
You write in your essay that you knew from the age of five that you were not like others, that you were different. Can you tell us about how you came to realize your gender identity?
You know, it's just something that is similar to knowing whether you're right-handed or left-handed. Hmm. I knew from a very young age, I always felt that I should be wearing my sister's clothing. And at times when I found myself at home and alone, that's exactly what I did.
What prompted you? What attracted you to the military?
Well, a number of things. My father was a World War II veteran and was initially deferred for putting in communications equipment on the submarines that were built in Manitowoc. Mm. Then he enlisted in 1944 and went to training and was shipped to the European Theater of Operations in the fall of 1944, just in time for the Battle of the Bulge. And he was actually taken prisoner and spent several months in a German POW camp in Bad Orb, Germany, and was freed on April 1st, which just happened to be Easter Sunday, 1945.
And so you looked up to him, his story, and wanted to follow in those footsteps?
Yes, I think that was really my main impetus. I also was in the first year, maybe it was the second year, of voluntary service. And I did have a lottery number that was rather low. So I ended up taking the initiative and enlisting.
It was 50 years for you to come out as trans after living that way. 50 years. What were those decades like? And when did you come to the realization that this had to change?
Yes. So it was very difficult having this secret. I knew who I was, I mean, from the very beginning, but society wasn't ready to have a male exhibit those type of characteristics of actually transitioning. And so I deeply suppressed those feelings for decades. I did interrupt that suppression, if you will, with brief periods of living authentically, where I would go out and purchase female clothing and wear them always in the safety of my apartment or my home, and as usually over a weekend, and usually as Monday morning rolled around and I knew I was going to go back to work and putting on a uniform of the United States Army, the guilt would set in and I would purge those purchases. So suppressed it deeply, retired from the military in 2004, and shortly after went back to work in Washington, D.C. And I had a position, I was a government contractor with the U.S. Army's Force Management School at Fort Belvoir, a lead instructor. And the move to D.C., my spouse stayed in the Madison area, and I moved to D.C. by myself. That was my personal tipping point, and I basically had the opportunity to live authentically the entire time except when I was on the podium. And after 6 months of doing that, I knew I had to start living up to my own expectations instead of the expectations of others, and made arrangements to transition.
Well, go ahead. Well, working as a lead instructor for the U.S. Army Force Management School in Virginia in 2007, you're fired. You're fired for what your director called your problem. What was that like? How difficult was that for you?
Yeah, so I informed the HR director in the schoolhouse that I was going to be gone for 6 weeks and I would return as my authentic self. And I returned, met with the director. He was a retired three-star general. And shook my hand and thanked me for coming back to teach the course. And the next words out of his mouth were, we've already hired your replacement. So as a, I guess, a fairly successful individual, having risen to the position of full colonel in the military, that was quite a shock to me. And I had to do some soul searching after that, but I ended up going back, being hired shortly thereafter as a senior analyst into the Pentagon as my authentic self. So while I was prohibited from serving authentically while in uniform, they were happy to have me and my skill sets as a civilian.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Colonel Sherry Swakowski, who served for 35 years in the Army, highest ranking out transgender veteran in the country. And Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram is here, serves in the U.S. Space Force, president of SPARTA. That's a transgender military advocacy organization. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We heard from Nate in Milwaukee, called in, couldn't stay with us. And Nate wonders, Bree, how you deal with fellow soldiers or colleagues who do not support gender identity.
Well, that's something you have to deal with on an individual basis and given the circumstances. But our equal opportunity protections within the Department of Defense include gender identity. So if people are deliberately harassing a transgender individual, there are opportunities for recourse through the Equal Opportunity Program, through bringing that up with commanders and leadership. But in general, what I try and do is I assume whatever is coming my way or to someone else happens to be coming out of ignorance, not out of malice. So my first reaction is always an attempt to educate and to help people understand why the language they're using might be problematic, or to see, you know, the harm that they might be doing with the way they're acting, and to try and bring everyone together and understand that we're all here to get the mission done. But if it goes beyond that, there are formal methods of recourse for transgender service members.
As Sherry told her story and the firing in 2007 being Sherry's problem about being a gender, going through gender transition, I'm wondering, reframe, are these firings still prevalent, you know, more than a decade later?
Well, thankfully, now that we have open transgender service, no one is separated from the military solely based on gender identity or being transgender. Mm. But we did lose a lot of people prior to that policy going into place, very similar to all the lesbian, gay, and bisexual service members we lost in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell era. And they were for reasons, you know, just as silly now as they were then, that these people were fully capable of serving, met every standard, but were separated based solely on something that had nothing to do with their ability to serve. But as mentioned, now we're in a place where people can come out, they can be their authentic selves, and they can reach their full potential.
You bring up Don't Ask, Don't Tell, signed into law in 1993, didn't include the transgender community, left out of it. What was the impact of this law that was in effect until a decade ago?
Well, I think both Don't Ask, Don't Tell and our transgender policies basically limited the capability of the United States military. Any organization, society, and the military is no different, that chooses to self-eliminate talent has a problem of not being able to reach where it could be. And we as a military need to both attract and retain the best and the brightest who are otherwise capable of meeting our standards. Because we're going to fight and win wars in the future based on brain power. We are a highly technological and skilled force with years of training that is the envy of the world. And if we throw out service members who have those skills, or we're not willing to bring in a service member with an incredible brain that just happens to be in a transgender body, we are not doing all we can to protect and defend this nation.
Sherry, I want to ask you, you served several years as regional HR director for the U.S. Forest Service in Colorado, and I'm wondering, from that HR director perspective, what should human resources personnel do more, do differently, do better for trans employees?
Sure. You know, a lot of it is just having an open mind, understanding that trans people are real, that trans people bring talent, and in many cases, the very best talent that's out there. And, you know, when I was in the military, one of my duties was I was a regional readiness manager. So I handled readiness of all of the units in the Wisconsin National Guard. And as someone who is also transgender, I can tell you from personal experience, both personal and professional, that when a trans individual has lifted from their shoulders all of the things they go through with hiding themselves prior to 2016, that individual's readiness level goes up, and that in turn raises the readiness levels of that unit that they belong to.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the essay collection. It's called With Honor and Integrity. That's Colonel Sherry Swolkowski, contributed to the work. Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram, co-editor, president of Sparta Transgender Military Advocacy Organization. You can join in. Are you a veteran? What do you think of the military's role in leading the way on civil rights? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're exploring a volume of 26 essays that brings the experiences of transgender military personnel, past and present, into sharper focus. In one essay, senior airman Hannah Tripp writes, "I fought for rights in which I myself am not entitled, yet the foundations of our democracy instilled a belief that despite its imperfections, it was worth defending," end quote. The book is called With Honor and Integrity, and Colonel Sherry Swolkowski and Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram stay with us. Bree Fram, Hannah Tripp's essay was really breathtaking. This idea that, you know, rising to the mission, even while being discriminated against, even while being persecuted in my own country, just looking at clear focus that it's the mission at the end of the day. What did you hear in Hannah Tripp's words?
Well, you hit it just right, that the mission comes first. And what transgender people had to do for so long was set aside their identity because they had beliefs and purpose that was above their being trans. And they were thankful for the freedoms and the opportunities that this country has given them. And they were they felt that defending those ideals that we've enshrined in the Constitution, that chance to make a more perfect union, is really important to us. And for most trans people, you'll find that being trans is maybe number 7 or 9 or 15 down their list of identities. And take my example, I'll say that coming ahead of that is being a parent, being a spouse, being a guardian in the Space Force, being a rocket scientist, being a nerd, being a skier, all these things, you know, they come before, oh yeah, I just happen to be trans as well. And while it matters and it makes a difference in some circumstances, these transgender service members just want to serve for all the same reasons as everyone else in the country. And they put that ahead for so long of them being trans and taking any action on that.
Sherry, in your essay, you wonder about how much better of an officer you could have been had you been able to transition while serving and doing it earlier. How do you think your career would have been different?
Oh, yes. Great question. So I think back, you know, I probably did a few things well to earn promotions to full colonel in a very competitive environment. And if I had been given an opportunity, maybe back, not then, because like I say, society and the military weren't ready for trans people or even to acknowledge our existence, and I would have been discharged, I'm certain, from the military had I come out during my career. But if I had the opportunity to serve now, there's no reason why a trans individual cannot be one of the generals, 1, 2, 3, 4 star in the future. And it's things like that that give me a lot of peace of mind and a lot of hope for all of these people, that young folks that are out there serving, that are able to put service ahead of individual needs. You know, it's military values, and these people did it under very trying times over the last administration, and right now their potential is unlimited. So it's a wonderful thing, and I'm extremely happy for them.
I want to talk a moment about what I learned from Jordan Blisk, who talked about Pride Month and sees Pride Month differently forever. And this is Blisk's words here. After soaking in shame for years over my sexuality, gender identity, and race, I'm finally beginning to understand why the concept of pride is so meaningful. Pride is central to reclaiming one's identity from shame. Briefram, I think I too will see Pride Month in a much different light as Jordan Blisk explains it here.
I totally agree, and I echo Jordan's experience. The first time I went to a big Pride event was here in Washington, D.C., about a year before that trans ban lifted. And for me to go there and see this overwhelming ocean of people expressing their joy, expressing love, being who they are, that was just this wave of amazing humanity in all its forms, washing over me and lifting me up. And I think that's what we have to take from Pride, is that it's not just about LGBTQ folks. It's about these authenticity that we have, making the world a better place for all of us, not just our LGBTQ folks.
Sherry Swakowski, what would you add there?
Just that, you know, the gift of authenticity is such a precious thing. And, you know, I use myself as an example in my personal relationships. And Full transparency, I've been married several times, but my marriage has never had an opportunity to work out because I wasn't myself. And so we have to be authentic. We have to be the best person we can for ourselves before we can be the best person for anybody else.
The act of writing can be cathartic. It can really release emotions. And Bree Fram, you had so many people willing to sit down and do this, put pen to paper or to look at that computer screen. As I think one essay said, that blinky light just stood there at waiting for me to write something and nothing came. Did you hear from these essay writers what this act of writing did for them and their own emotions and what they have gone through?
I think what you might find if you asked our contributors that question is a thought that they knew what they were doing and they understand the power of story. Because the most important thing any of us have done to change perception of transgender military service is that sharing of story. It's that attempt to make a connection on a human level. And as mentioned, you know, some of the essays being funny or revealing the lighter moments that have happened in military careers that people can connect with. And that ability to get those stories out there in a way that humanizes these individuals. They aren't the boogeymen that we've all been told to fear. And if we can get that out, if we can connect, we can make a difference and hopefully set the environment for those that come after us to be able to go even further than any of us were able to.
Sherry, what was it like for you to write?
Well, it's... I've had probably a little bit more history to write about. And plus the fact that I used my PhD dissertation to discuss some of the issues that transgender service members are still encountering, even though they're allowed to enlist and serve openly. But it was a very rewarding, almost kind of a historical document is how I looked at it.
Bree Fram, I'm going to have you allow you here for last words, but looking into the future and what happens for the military next, this is fragile ground, as you started by saying earlier on. What is your hope?
My hope is that we get to that point where a military without transgender service members is just impossible to imagine, because we have seen the contributions that people have made in every career field, in every rank, all around the world. And there's no reason for a future administration to turn back the clock and to try and say, no, you're not welcome here, you're not warranted, to try and use all the same arguments that were used against every minority group that's incorporated into the military in the past, and to look at the evidence and say, transgender people are serving honorably, they're doing great things, and we want them here in the United States military to make a difference for all of us.
Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram, thank you for joining us.
It is absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And Colonel Sherry Swakowski, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure.
Wisconsin native Sherry Swakowski served for 35 years in the Army, where she attained the rank of colonel. Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram serves in the U.S. Space Force, president of SPARTA. Earlier, we talked with Mel Emser Herbert, a sociology professor at Hamline University. The book is With Honor and Integrity. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.